first. Okay, so attendees in the chamber must switch off their delegate microphone when they are not speaking. Attendees in the chamber using their laptops to join the meeting virtually must ensure that they mute their laptop speakers and laptop microphone. Attendees at home must mute their laptop microphone when they are not speaking and should, where possible, use a headset, headphones or earphones. All attendees should pin the cameras of the chamber and the chair, if not physically in the chamber, in their Teams meeting by right-clicking on each and selecting pin. The meeting will be both audio and video recorded, and members to remain mindful of this during all proceedings. Instant messaging facilities should be used by members to indicate if they wish to speak on an item on the agenda. Members are reminded to only use the following in instant messenger: Q if you wish to ask a question, P if you wish to propose, and S if you wish to second. Please refrain from typing anything else into the instant messaging facility. The chairperson will invite members to speak in the order in which their message was received on the instant messenger. At this stage, you unmute your microphone to speak or click the button on the delegate microphone if you are physically in the meeting room. It is important for ease of use that only the member invited to speak by the chairperson unmutes their microphone. Otherwise, the meeting becomes unmanageable. Members accessing the meeting remotely should ensure their camera is switched on when speaking. Following the presentation of the officer's report, the chairperson will call for a proposer or seconder. This should be done using the instant messenger feature. Please do not submit these until asked to do so, as it may be missed. If two members ask to propose, the first member having indicated through instant messenger will become the proposer, and the second member having indicated will become the seconder. The chairperson will ask the proposer and seconder in turn to unmute to indicate vocally that they are proposing and seconding the decision. During a show of hands vote, members should indicate whether they are for, against or abstaining using the instant messenger. The totals will be tallied and the Democratic Services Manager will read them out for the purposes of the recording. During a recorded vote, the Democratic Services Manager will read the names of the committee members in alphabetical order. Members should respond for, against or abstain when their name is read out. Members accessing the meeting remotely should ensure their camera is switched on when voting. If you need to leave the meeting early, please indicate via instant messenger so that we are aware this is an active decision and does not indicate connectivity problems. Members are reminded of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct. Okay, thank you. We'll make a start. I didn't receive any apologies. Did Democratic Services receive any apologies?
No apologies.
Okay, thank you. Move on to declarations of conflicts of interest. Any of those?
None.
No. Okay. So we have the action sheet of the Neighbourhood Services Committee. Item 3, the meeting was held on the 22nd of September. Could I get a proposer and a seconder for the action sheet, please?
Proposed, Henry Riley. Proposed.
Henry. Thanks, Kathy. Okay. No issues arising from the action sheet. Are you happy to move on to item 4?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you. Item 4 is the scheme of delegation report from the 1st of January 2020 to the 31st of September 2020. And Roland, I think you're coming in on that, are you?
Yes. Thank you, Chair. This is the scheme of delegation report that for decisions that I have taken in line with the scheme of delegation itself. There only is one decision that I have to report through for the period detailed within the report, but it should be noted that many decisions were taken by directors and chief executive during the period where the delegated authority was passed to management at the time of the first wave of COVID. Chair, this is for decision, and happy to take any questions.
Okay, Roland, thank you. We have a couple of questions in there first. Councillor McKevitt, you were in there first. Councillor McKevitt, are you on mute? Yeah, Councillor McKevitt's having problems there. Councillor McKee, we'll take your question there. You were next.
Thanks, Chair. That's in relation to, on page 5, litter bin policy. I'm just hoping on the same item. I think of item 4 beside it there. A wee bit of a question around that there regarding litter bin policy. If you live along the shore, and I can include Kilkeel and Newcastle in this, and some of the bins do not have wood flaps on them, and we're forever getting criticised for pouchers not doing their work and others, because birds will literally go and pull, particularly seagulls, will pull out the rubbish out of the bin. So they're obviously lying open.
Sure, I think that's a different item.
Is it? Sorry. What item is that I'm on?
We're on item 4, Councillor McKee.
Is that not item 4, no?
No, item 4, Chair, was the scheme of delegation report.
Yeah, item 4 is the scheme of delegation for decision. It's not that item, no.
Right. Well,
was that something on the action sheet, Councillor McKee, you're talking about?
Well, unless I put the wrong item down to it, I might have done.
It's maybe something on the action sheet. Roland, would you be able to clarify there?
Chair, it may be to do with the annual business plan, I think it might be. I'm just looking through that, which is item 5.
Item 5, is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry,
leave it. Next one,
thanks,
yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm sorted if I can.
Yeah, you can come in there now, Councillor McKevitt. Yeah.
Thanks very much. It is on item 4, and it's to do with number 2 and number 6, the decision to commence formal restructuring within a department, and other decisions such as those with political, media, or industrial relations and implications, etc. I just want to know, does those decisions be brought back to council at any time through a different committee, or what are they about on that? Thank you.
Chair, those details are contained within the scheme of delegation. The report in front of you this evening just is really the decisions that I've taken as the Director of Neighbourhood Services and the services which are within the remit of this committee. So I haven't taken any decisions in relation to number 2 or number 6 to report to you this evening. If I had, then I would report that. But there may be other council directorates who may have taken decisions which relate to them.
Yeah, it's just for confirmation, just so I understand the report itself. So do they, when you make a decision on those, or any director makes a decision on those, are they, those decisions go back to full council after committee?
Absolutely, Chair. This report, as part of the Neighbourhood Services Minutes, will go through to full council.
Okay, thank you, Roland. Thank you.
No problem.
Yeah, thank you, Councillor McGavitt. I see we have a proposal there from Councillor Clark and seconded by Councillor Stokes. So we'll move on to item 5, which is the annual assessment of Directorate Business Plan 2019 to 2020, and that's Roland again.
Yes, thank you, Chair. This item relates to the annual business plan from the last financial year. The process would normally be that we would present this business plan usually on the first month of the new financial year, so it would usually have been April. At the same time, you would present the forthcoming business plan for the incoming year. Obviously, this year was different as we had no committee meetings in April, and we also then developed emergency business plans for the incoming year. So this is a bit of a mop up, for want of a better description, of last year's business plan, and all committees are considering these this month. So it really sort of highlights the key actions that we had committed to previously, and the progress against each of them, and comments on them, Chair. So happy to take any questions on that.
Okay, thank you, Roland. I see Councillor McKee's back in there now on item five, which is what he thought he was on, so we'll take him first.
Yeah, sorry, it is item five. Yes, in relation to the litter bin provision, and it says complete it now, work into policy. But just as I said, in the coastal areas, we have issues with seagulls in particular who will pull the rubbish. If the bins are usually full, particularly weekend or special events, and the same in Newcastle, and the birds will pull that out, and then there's a lot of waste, and obviously it creates a lot of work for the council staff to clean up again. Could somehow that be included within the policy that we'll have another look at that and try and install bird flaps on those open sided bins? Thank you.
Chair, certainly, if I can go back in there, the action that was against was contained within the business plan was in relation to the development of a policy, which has now been completed, and indeed this committee has approved it. What I would say, where there are specific issues that have been highlighted, that's something that we can consider on a case-by-case basis, obviously budget provision, assuming we have budget provision for same.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Councillor McKevitt. Thanks very much, Anna. I was delighted to say there's no red sad faces in this report, Roland. And I have to say that there was a few things in it that probably couldn't be helped, and that's why there wasn't more green happy faces. But I just want to commend the team that you lead on the 90% or over 90% in exceeding the targets for biodegradable waste. The second highest improvement in the amount of the waste that is sent to landfill across Northern Ireland. And the great increase in the brown bin waste collected for dry recyclables for the last year, and the reduction in the black bin waste. All of those things just didn't happen overnight, and I suppose the plan was coming into action. So I want to praise all the staff and the team for those figures and that. There are a few in that report that, you know, we probably could improve on, but the times that are in it, most of it couldn't be helped. So just we know the caution just on the cleanliness of the streets. I noticed that the score had dropped down on that. I'm not sure if the score drops, it's a good thing, or if it goes up, it's a good thing. So maybe just on that, but congratulations on that. That's great work.
Okay, thank you, Councillor McKevitt. Councillor Riley, do you have a question there?
Yes, thanks, Madam Chair. It was on the issue of vehicles procurement, and because there's quite a number of references to fleet management and renting or buying vans and that, and I wanted to know, have we looked any further at contract power rather than outright purchase, and how will we facilitate the green fleet development? I'm presuming it would be hydrogen cell or something like that, Roland, but if you could just give me an update on those couple of aspects, please.
Okay, Chair. Yeah, thank you, Councillor. Very good question. I suppose two parts to that. One is in relation to the procurement route for new vehicles. That will always be considered as part of the business case for the vehicles. So whether you would contract hire or whether you would purchase, what I would say is on where we have looked at this to date, given the infrastructure that we have, and we have our own maintenance staff in both sides of the district, then it's usually more cost effective to purchase the vehicles. That being said, that's something that should always be considered going forward. In relation to the greening of the fleet or making the fleet more sustainable, that is a decision that the council has taken, and indeed we've got a business case later on this evening to support the procurement of specialist advice to help us develop the transition from where we are now, which is largely reliant on fossil fuel vehicles, to hopefully become a more sustainable fleet as we face the climate emergency.
Okay.
Thank you.
I see we have a proposal there in Councillor Stokes. Could I get a seconder for item five, please? Okay, thank you, Councillor McKevitt. Okay, we'll move on to item six. Item six is the review of the council bus shelter policy. Kevin, you're coming in on this one, yeah?
Thanks, Chair. Yes, the recommendation from the report is that the officers proceed to review the current bus shelter policy and followed that to revert back to the committee with the revised policy for its agreement. Chair, just as background, the council is empowered under the Local Government Miscellaneous Provisions Order 1985 with the consent of the Department of Regional Development to erect and maintain on any road within the district shelters for the protection from weather of persons waiting to use the public transport. The council adopted the current policy, which is attached to the report, at its monthly meeting on the 7th September 2015. The policy states that it will be reviewed together with any wider strategic review of assets, but not more than 4 years from adoption, so it's now due for review. Some key considerations, Chair, just to refer to them. The council over the years has invested significant capital and revenue resources in the provision of bus shelters, having an estimated 300 bus shelters across the district. Translink are also a provider of bus shelters across the district, and they too operate this function with their own agreed policy. In recent years, the council has attempted to coordinate its provision of bus shelters in a way that takes account of Translink's programme for the provision of bus shelters in this area so that the council may focus its resources on those shelters which Translink are not proposing to provide. This has not proved to be that successful, Chair, and it's something perhaps we need to look at when we review the policy. But the recommendation, Chair, is that we do review the policy as officers and come back to the committee with a revision for further comment and approval.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Kevin, there's a bit of an echo coming to you. I did notice when Roland was speaking that he was on mute and you couldn't hear the echo. So maybe that's, Kevin, if you put your screen on mute, maybe we'd be able to hear you through the chamber.
Yeah, anybody in the chamber, Chair, needs to have both their speaker and their microphone on their laptop put on mute. Otherwise, there is feedback comes back.
Okay, Kevin, we've a couple of questions in there. Councillor Mason, you were in there first.
Thanks very much, Chair. Look, I suppose bus shelters in general are a bit of a bugbear, I suppose, for many of us. Councillors, there's lots of issues with them, so I suppose I really welcome that this review is coming into play. Kevin, can I just ask, will this include like is this just purely for new bus shelters that are required, or will it include upgrades of particularly old style ones? I'm just referring specifically to the old style ones that are along Annacloy in Deconnet. These ones, they can't even be used at the minute because of the style of them. They just flood. There's nowhere for the water to get away. They're right down to the ground, and they're just full of muck and litter. It just is basically a gathering point for them. And also, is there a time scale of when this review will be done, and when, if there are going to be replacements and upgrades, when this will be started? Thanks,
Kevin. Kevin, do you want to come back on that one, or do you want to take all the questions first?
I'm happy to come back, Chair. I suppose my computer is on mics or on mute, so I'm not sure where the echo's coming from.
Sorry, the Kevin, I've just muted you there. It's just there was you've turned it back off again, so.
Okay. Thanks. All right. Thanks, Sarah. The policy itself is more focused on the decision-making process for providing new shelters. So it's the mechanism or the criteria that the council will consider for requests to come in for a new bus shelter. So that's the focus on the policy. But Councillor Mason does raise some good points in terms of the existing bus shelters. And that is something that we do need to look at. As indicated, we have something like over 300 bus shelters across the district. Now, some of those bus shelters would have been installed many years ago to comply with a particular request that existed at that time. A family perhaps lived in that area, or a number of families lived in that area with children who needed some sort of shelter while they're waiting for a bus to go to school. Those families have since grown up, and we're confident that there are bus shelters out within our district which probably wouldn't see anyone in them from one week to the next. And but they're still there. They're still there for us to maintain. So I think going forward, we need to have some sort of process where we review all of our bus shelters and determine which ones are still required, and those that are not required and are beyond their shelf life, we have some sort of program to remove those. Because if we can do that, we've become more efficient, effective in terms of spending our resources on those bus shelters that we truly do need. But that is there is a fair bit of work to do that, and it's getting the resources during this period of time to actually undertake that piece of work. So I think Councillor Mason, that kind of answers your question. The policy itself is very much focused on new requests, but it is a piece of work that we need to do to review those shelters that we have and those that we need to keep, and then to have a program in place whereby we have some sort of maintenance for them. We already have systems in place. I take calls on a regular basis from councillors about specific problems with bus shelters, and our maintenance teams are there to address those problems when they do arise.
Thank you, Kevin. Cathy, are you happy enough?
Yeah, Kevin, thanks a million for that. See, just on, Chair, if you don't mind, can I just ask something off the back of that? Just whenever you say about, I know that there's some shelters that are maintained by the council, and then there's others that are maintained by TransLink, and then I think there's even others that are maintained by a company for TransLink. Is there any way of circulating which bus shelters are you know, maintained? Because sometimes you're going around three different avenues before you can get to the right person for maintenance.
Sure. TransLink will have a very accurate database in terms of their bus shelters. We have a good database in terms of the ones which the council maintains in the legacy Newry council area. Our database in relation to the Down District Council, the former Down District Council area, is just not as good. And that's a part of the piece of work that we would need to do going forward so that we have a much better database. But certainly the information is there about TransLink bus shelters at the moment.
Yes, thank you. Councillor Clark, you were in there for a question?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. And I agree with what Councillor Mason's saying. You know, there's a number of them not being used and a number of them not fit for purpose. I'm happy enough that we take a good look at that. There's no point in wasting resources either if they're not being used. We've also then legacy Banbridge as well, so you've the likes of Leitrim and Valley Ward would be a lot of them rural style bus shelters, and I'm not sure if they've been used either. But in regards to rural areas, they are vital, you know, to keep the public dry, particularly school children going to school and that, you know. So I welcome that we're going to review the policy and look at if there's any gaps as well moving forward. And there has to be, if we look at central government, there has to be a focus on public transport if we're talking about mitigating the impact of climate change. We need to have the infrastructure in place so people can use it safely and keep it dry and through the elements. And to encourage new people to start using public transport, I think it's essential that there has to be that discussion with the central government also. So I'd be interested to see, you know, even if we write to the department and Department of Infrastructure, I suppose, in regards to, I know times are tight and the funding will be tight and whatever, but if we're serious about, as I say, tackling climate change, then these are the types of things we need to look at. Is there going to be additional funding? TransLink will be squeezed in funding also, you know. So I would propose we write to DFI in regards to an increase in expenditure for public transport bus shelters across the entire region, and look at is there any other funding opportunities available. You know, there may have been opportunities, if you look at the Rural Development Fund, that we might have had an opportunity maybe to look at funding in that part. So maybe to look at, is there a potential to roll out, you know, bus shelters right throughout our rural area in any future tranches of funding that come available. It might be useful maybe discuss with Kevin McGarry, is there any slippage in regards to rural development funding or new funding coming available. But I'm happy enough to second.
suppose, Chair, if I'd make one comment in that, a number of years ago, the providing of bus shelters would have been a responsibility or would have been a task taken on by DFI Roads. That seems to have transferred to TransLink. And if the council did decide to write to DFI in relation to this, I think it would be to both DFI Roads and to TransLink and put the question to both.
No, that's fair enough. I just agree with Kevin's comments in regards to the frustration, how slow the process is with TransLink. I'm thinking of bus shelters in around Annalong that took years and years, and I don't think they've ever been delivered. You know, so it's really, really frustrating that kids going to school are becoming adults and there's still no bus shelters, you know, so the situation it's not fit for the purpose. And it shouldn't really fall all of it onto councils, you know. We have invested a lot of capital and money in regards to the bus shelters and we're still not meeting the entire need, you know, so there has to be a dose of reality in central government too.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Clark. That item 6 was proposed by Councillor Mason and seconded by Councillor Clark. So if everyone's happy enough, we'll move on to item 7. Sorry, not move on yet. Councillor McKee, is this a question for item 6?
No, sure, I should have put 7 down. Thank you.
Oh, okay, just hold on. Okay, so we'll move on to item 7, which is provision of small Christmas tree at North Promenade, Newcastle. And Kevin, you're coming in on that again.
Yes, Chair, this is an action from last month's committee meeting. Officers were tasked to consider the potential to place a small cut Christmas tree with lights at North Promenade in Newcastle. So the report looks at the two options of just doing that, giving costs. So the first option would be, as was initially proposed, to get approximately a 5 metre cut Christmas tree and place it at a suitable location. And the location we're talking about is close to the public toilets at North Promenade. Estimated cost for that, there's some infrastructure work that should be carried out, and the estimated cost for the first year will be about $2,585. And then there'll be an estimated annual recurring cost of about £300 a year. Option two would be to dovetail in with our sustainable Christmas tree program. So not buy a cut Christmas tree, but buy a sustainable Christmas tree, again, 4 to 5 metres high. Place it in the same location that we were talking about for option one. Estimated cost for that, $2,700, and a recurring cost of around £300 a year. So the location is the same, it's just to the side of the public toilets. I was given a photograph of that along with the report, and indicate within the report that a few years ago the local community tried to access a small Christmas tree there. It was a much smaller tree than what the one that we would propose, but it didn't survive and may not have survived because of the sea environment or for other reasons. But our grounds manager has looked at the site and has some confidence that a tree could be planted there and could take and survive. So, Chair, it's really direction from the committee as to whether to proceed with either option, and if so, which option to proceed with, and are you happy with the location that we're talking about?
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Councillor McKee, you were in there with a question.
Yes, Chair, thank you very much. Maybe just for my own interest and maybe a correction, looking at the photograph, I would have understood that to be South Promenade, Newcastle, because I couldn't figure out where that toilet was in the north of the promenade and the picture of the harbour in the background. So maybe Kevin could highlight, but wherever it is, I think it's almost a no-brainer when you compare the prices of $2,585 for a cut tree and a sustainable one for $2,7, just £230 of difference, and the reoccurring cost would be £300. So to me, if our grounds maintenance man says he could make a job of it, I would imagine we would go for the sustainable tree. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Councillor McKee. I actually just noticed that it actually says on the photograph that it's South Promenade. I wouldn't know Newcastle, but I'm just noticing it now. So, Kevin, if you'd like to come back on that.
Okay.
It was Roland Moore said it was South, North Promenade, so I was just
following what he told me.
Funny, and I actually looked at, I zoomed in on the map, and I thought I'd seen North Promenade, but there you tell me that the photograph I put on it actually says South Promenade, so apologies about that. Was there a question there, Chair?
Not really, no.
No, it was more of a comment. Councillor Clark, you were next there.
Yeah, Chair. It is South Promenade, and I think maybe got confused between North Pier and the lighting and the North Pier. Might have been the confusion. I think there's been a number of times that the local community have sort of came together and tried to get some sort of Christmas tree planted. The last couple of attempts haven't been good. It's like a Christmas tree you'd put in your house that they put in just with very small lights and that. It was just an effort of the community to do something. And I think that's, I don't think there was a proper root ball on the trees, you know. So I don't think they were going to survive planting them like a week before or a couple of weeks before Christmas, you know. So I think of the, I would propose we go for the living sustainable Christmas tree. I think it will survive. And if we can slightly, the electricity supply is already there from previous attempts to put Christmas trees in. I know ourselves as a party put a Christmas tree in there one year, a cut tree. So we got the power to the tree or the location of the tree. So if we can look at even if there's a possibility to get it some shelter behind the pump house, there's an NI water pump house there too. So it mightn't suit the ground conditions. I'm not sure what the ground conditions are, but it would certainly give a better protection from the elements, the southeasterly wind and that, you know. So I think it's long overdue that there's some sort of celebration of Christmas at Newcastle Harbour. It's a long time the Chamber of Commerce would have kept the resources and they would have put them down the road and in the main street and that, and they saw that as their that was their role. They didn't see a role for putting Christmas lights or putting Christmas trees at Newcastle Harbour, where there's a number of businesses in that location and they're going through hard times as well and could see with a bit of Christmas cheer as well.
Yeah, thank you, Councillor Clark. Councillor Owen, you have a question?
Yeah, thanks very much. I am absolutely all for celebrating Christmas, and definitely this year of any year. Oh my word! Without doubt, we all need to see Christmas, and certainly the end of 2020 would be welcomed by all of us, no doubt. I am just curious, and again, probably just coming in as a newbie, I am just curious, how many Christmas trees does Newcastle actually have and sort of spend as far as all of the Christmas decorations and everything else that happens in Newcastle? Because, you know, sometimes we are even struggling to get lights in St Field and Balnahinch, you know, let alone a second, third or fourth Christmas tree and lights and all of this. Now, I totally appreciate that Newcastle is a tourism town, you know, but my concern is as well, and I wouldn't be doing my job if I wasn't sort of lobbying for our area. You know, it just feels like, again, you know, more money is going into Newcastle and the bigger town. So I'm just curious to know how many other sort of Christmas trees are there in Newcastle. If I'm wrong and this is the only one, then, you know, I'll be quiet and I'll eat my words, you know, but it's just from the point of view of wondering sort of, is everything sort of been divvied out fairly to the other DEAs? And I'm saying this for the other DEAs as well, as much as Rowallan. You know, and just making sure that we're all sort of getting a fair slice of the cake. That's all. Oh, my lights have gone out in the car. Sorry. So yeah, that's all. Listen, thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you, Councillor Owen. Kevin, do you want to come back on that?
Chair, there's one 12 metre artificial Christmas tree in Newcastle. This will be a sustainable tree if the committee decides that. There would also be a number of trees in and around the town that would also be lit up. They aren't Christmas trees, they're just different types of trees. There would be a range of pole illuminations placed in Newcastle as well, in around the main thoroughfares. And there would also be pole wraps that we have placed on the lampposts along the promenade. you know, this is something that has been discussed before within committee as to whether everyone's getting a fair share. And that's part of the reason why the Christmas Illuminations group was set up, so that councillors could meet and solely on that particular and move it forward. And one of the main things that has come out of that group is the idea of the sustainable Christmas tree, and that's a program that we're implementing right across the district. And this year we continue to do that. And we're currently looking at a further 6 applications at the moment to see whether we can place sustainable Christmas trees and lights in other towns and villages and small hamlets in the area. And it's through that type of program, I suppose, Chair, that we're able to kind of spread the Christmas cheer to places that currently are not getting that. But I suppose the council recognised that, you know, resources are not infinite, and therefore it's through programs such as the Sustainable Christmas Tree Program that we can involve communities, help communities, but also communities to help themselves to try and brighten their towns and villages. And the work that the Saintfield Community Association done is exemplary. They are very active in doing that for their town, not only at Christmas but at other times in the years through Ulster in Bloom and Britain in Bloom. And they're a credit to any community organisation in terms of doing it for themselves. But the council does work within Saintfield. It's the council that puts up the Christmas illuminations in Saintfield every year and has them tested and checked and takes them down again. We can always do more, but as I say, resources are not infinite, and we have to pick and choose where we think we can have most impact.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Councillor O'Neill, are you happy with that?
Yeah, I guess so. It's just probably more again going to Newcastle and rather than sort of going to the other areas, and it's not just Saintfield, you know, there's other DEAs, there's other towns, you know, that I'm sure maybe kind of feel a wee bit, you know, Newcastle again, you know, but and that's not taken away from Willie. Willie's absolutely doing what he should be doing for his area. But anyway, listen, thanks very much.
No problem, thank you. Councillor O'Reilly, you were in there next.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. I'm all on for sustainable trees and whatever, but my concern with this is that, you know, the Christmas illuminations group is there, and people had their input into it, and I'm just a bit concerned that the councillor then can come along and, you know, just ignore that process and put in a request for a tree or additional illuminations on the North Pier and at the harbour in Newcastle. And I think that should be a concern to us all, that it should be a process that we do throughout the year in consultation with the management. And Kilkeen's a good example of that, in the fact that we're now getting a nice tree after last year's disaster, and we're getting new lighting and whatever for the poles. So it can be done, but it should be done through the process. I'm not going to condemn the proposal, but I'm concerned that it's not fair on other councillors that do go through due process to get what they need for their towns and villages, just to have, you know, that process ignored and the queue jump later on. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor O'Reilly. Kevin, would you like to respond to that?
Yeah, I suppose, Chair, the proposals to increase the Christmas illuminations in towns and villages is the very thing that is discussed in the group of councillors. Now, how this one arose was that through the discussion there was a consideration of a couple of extra items in terms of Newcastle, and that's what I reported on last month. The council decided to progress on one of those and not the other. And during that discussion then, like last month, then the further proposal came out through the discussion to consider this option that you're looking at today. So I suppose in response to Councillor Reddy's question, that is indeed the subgroup of councillors is the venue where these discussions happen. But it's not a decision-making body, so anything that is discussed and considered at that that subgroup has to come through this committee for final approval.
Okay, thanks. Una, could I just ask also, just off track slightly, did Kilkeel, are we getting the 10-metre or 12-metre tree, Kevin?
We're going for a 12-metre tree. Good. With a narrow base. And
that's brilliant. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Councillor Riley. Councillor Clark, are you looking in there again?
Just briefly to come back, Chair, your indulgence, that Councillor Riley's incorrect to say that this didn't go through the process. This did go through the process, and as the officer already outlined, it did. I've raised this a number of times, this issue. The problem with Newcastle Harbour is we can't get pole-mounted lights on because they're timber poles, and we can't get DFI then to put the connections on them. And we've also looked at lighting up buildings, lighting up the oak tree in South Promenade, but it was too costly. It was coming in at 6,000 for the power source. So we were looking then for a solution that wouldn't cost as much money. The only lights at Newcastle Harbour is there's a string of lights goes down the North Pier. That's it.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Clark. Okay, so on item 7, it's my understanding we have a proposal from Councillor Clark and a seconder from Councillor McKee, and that is on option 2. Would that be correct?
That's a sustainable tree, yeah.
Yeah.
I propose that, yeah.
Thank you. So that option 2 has been chosen there on item 7, okay? So if we're happy to move on to item 8. Which is the household recycling centres reopening plan update, and Joe is going to update us on that.
Thank you, Chair. The purpose of the report is to provide a further update to the committee on the reopening of the council's household recycling centres. The reopening plan presented to the September committee has been implemented, and that was really where start week commenced on the 28th of September. All sites would be open from Monday to Saturday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. The other main point was to the commencement of the Saturday opening, which started on the 3rd of October 2020. And again, we'll have to just report that certain sites might have to close for lunch. And again, that information is on Appendix 1. What I would say is the opening of the household recycling centre on Saturday has been a benefit in reducing pressure at sites during the week and being welcomed by users. Household recycling centres have in general been working to the proposed new opening schedule. The next phase then for ourselves was to further extend the household recycling centre opening hours similar to pre-COVID. However, present COVID-19 restrictions, especially for people who need to self-isolate for 14 days, could have an impact on the service delivery. It is therefore proposed that we aim at working to the present opening hours arrangements. This will allow management a greater flexibility in managing staff resources. Once the number of restrictions and the number of cases are reduced relating to COVID-19, we will then further develop the service. As always, we will keep the elected members and the public up to date on what we're doing. So really, Chair, it's just the recommendation to note the update in relation to the reopening of the council household recycling centres. From writing the report, I would just say to you that we will certainly do our best to keep these sites open. Certainly the Northern Ireland Executive haven't closed us, but just to bear in mind that the Welsh Executive have closed their household recycling centres from the 19th of October through to the 9th of November, and that's due with what they're calling a fire break. So unless the Executive step in on us, certainly I'll be doing the best to keep our sites open. I'll take any questions, Chair.
Okay, thanks very much, Joe. We have a couple of questions. Just first in there was Councillor Curran.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. Just a quick question is, first of all, I welcome the opening of these recycling centres on Saturday. But I wonder that, you know, there's quite a number of people who work all weekend away and then they're only off at the weekend. And we open the recycling centres now from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. I wonder would be any possibility of considering maybe opening them a bit early so that we can facilitate the number of people who want to use them. Sorry, I thought I was on mute. Did you hear that question?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it did.
It's certainly something that we can look at. And as I say, we were looking at the whole idea of opening pre-COVID hours. But to be honest, with the present situation, what we're trying to do is just play safe of opening the sites between 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And once I start to stretch outside that, I need more resources to do that. I think Saturday has benefited a lot of people. So while I take on board, certainly we will look at it, but at the moment, say the biggest problem we have is if a member of staff's family tests positive, that they then have to be self-isolated for 14 days, which creates difficulties for ourselves. And certainly we have contingency plans in place to try and address that. But I say, for me at the moment, it's taken a lot of effort to get the sites open on special on Saturday. And I would ask the committee to consider trying to stay with that for at least the next month.
Well, Chair, I appreciate that, sort of, and I understand the circumstances that you're working under. But, you know, it's just to see if we can facilitate our ratepayers in the sense that I know to try and facilitate them as best we can. But I do understand what's happening. But I would ask Joe just to consider it, sometime if we can facilitate our ratepayers.
Yeah, thank you, Councillor Curran. I'm sure Joe will take that on board. No problem. Next on the list there was Councillor McKevitt.
Yeah, thanks very much, Chair. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, I can hear you.
Okay, thanks. And thanks, Joe, for the report. Could I just get an update on where Hilltown Recycling Centre is in that report? And and maybe going back to pre-COVID hours as well. Cheers.
On that particular Hilltown, actually pre-COVID, opened Monday to Saturday, but was closed on Tuesday. So Hilltown's the only one that would be open on the Monday, closed Tuesday, and then open from the Tuesday to Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. So I know there was a lot of concern about Hilltown, but we do have that.
Yeah, thank you, Joe.
Councillor
Curran.
Yeah, just to say, Chair, the vast majority of residents that I'm talking to are very happy to see Saturday opening. That was their biggest priority, and given the current restrictions we're under, and even with staff and stuff, I think we're doing very well to keep the HRCs open for the hours that we're doing. And I wouldn't certainly want to see them be closing, because we all got an awful lot of grief in regards to it. Just in regards to when the recycling centres were closed, there had been suggestions that there had been an escalation in the dumping of materials right throughout our region. The question is, has there been a massive improvement in regards to since the household recycling centres have opened, and particularly on the Saturday? And then just a question on the side question is in regards to the bulky waste collection. Currently, just lifting white goods. Is there any opportunity to expand that for mattresses?
Sure. On that one, the bulky, as far as I'm aware, we are starting to lift more items on that service. So hopefully that should be sorted out. Sorry, what was the first question? What was that?
Chair, sorry, could I just come in for clarity there? Joe's right, it is something that we're looking at the moment, but it is based on risk assessment from a COVID perspective. So whilst we do want to expand the range of materials that we can accept through bulky, I think that is fair to say that's a work in progress, but absolutely we'll keep members updated as and when we can expand that service.
Okay, thank you, Roland. Councillor Clark, could you just repeat your first question there to Joe?
It was just in regards to, since we've opened the household recycling centres on a Saturday, has there been a vast improvement in regards to the amount of illegal material being dumped throughout the region? Some councillors were saying there's a direct correlation with the household recycling centres being closed to dumping.
I think the difficulty we had was with the COVID restrictions and people at home. They were actually clearing out the houses, so that meant that there was maybe a bit more dumping on it. Now, the good thing for ourselves is that starting at the beginning of November, we will actually have two permanent enforcement officers who can actually maybe work on that. But at the minute, there are problems with fly tipping. but certainly we will address them as required.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. Okay, so on item 8, we had a proposal there from Councillor Andrews, and that was seconded by Councillor Stokes. So we move on to item 9. And item 9 is the hire or replacement of small vans for refuge collection, and that is Joe Parks again.
Okay, thank you, Chair. As I say, this is due to the hire replacement of small vans for refuge collection. The method of creating refuge collection vehicles has had changed as a direct result of COVID-19 and the requirement to comply to the government guidelines on social distancing. Currently, free crewing and social distancing is facilitated by using 13 other service vehicles to travel as an escort vehicle with the refuge vehicles. However, as these other services are starting to return to a more normal manning levels, they require their service vehicles back. To allow this to happen, then what we're doing is that basically on a short-term basis, hiring in 13 escort vehicles. Hiring these vans in will cost the council something like £95 a week each, and an additional on-plan revenue cost of about £1,250. To mitigate these costs, fleet management recommend that the council bring forward the planned replacement of council small vehicles under the council's planned vehicle replacement programme. The vans can then displace the higher escort vans and eliminate the higher costs until such time as COVID is no longer an issue or alternative strategies are in place. Further replacement details were provided at the November Neighbourhood Services Committee. So the recommendation is really to confirm approval to the hire of 13 vans to ensure the refuge service and the other services within Neighbourhood Services meet their service delivery standards, wise compliant to the COVID-19 controls, and also to endorse the recommendation to replace up 13 small vans under the current capital vehicle replacement budget. These are the vehicles that they displace. Will then eliminate the requirements to hire 13 escort vans, saving £1,250. In relation to the resource implications, there is half the cost, but we hope to be able to mitigate that by making a grant application to the DOE for COVID-19 related costs. I'll take any questions there.
Okay, thank you, Joe. I don't know about anyone else, but Joe's coming across a bit choppy there on my screen.
All right.
You okay? We have a couple of questions in there. First in was Councillor McKee.
Sorry, Chair, I wasn't just ready for there. Joe, just wondering, in relation to the replacement of the vans, obviously they're needed. I'm not saying they're not needed, and we can actually see that in action. We see the lorry, we see the van. Just wondering on the figures there, Joe, obviously at £95 each, at £1,250 a week, you know, if you were to maintain, keep them vans doing what they're doing, is it worth £65,000 a year? But you have down there to replace the vans, 13 vans, is £146,630. Now that would only equate to about £11,000 a van. So I don't know, unless you're able to buy the vans cheap, it would tell me maybe not something right about the figures there. Thank you.
Certainly, Chair, I'll check the figures, but the idea really is to move away from the hiring costs that we're incurring at the minute. And by doing that, we will use the money, the capital fleet money that we do have in place. I say I'll certainly check the figures, but we really do want to move away from the higher costs and, dare I say, use the capital budget that is in place at the moment.
Yes, like there isn't much money there to cover over 2 years. You know, at £65,000 a year, there's £130,000 for 2 years. It's still below the cost of buying a van. And will you actually need the vans in the end? You know, will there be a use for those vans should hopefully get out of this COVID and back to normality?
Chair, could I come in there, if that's okay? Chair, I think it's important to realise this is a moving feast from an operational perspective. When the COVID hit, we put the support vehicles in to ensure that with the appropriate social distancing measures for our staff, that will continue until it's safe to remove them. And at this point, we don't know when that's going to be. Now, we would hope that it's less than 12 months from when we started doing it, but we don't know. So I take Councillor McKee's point in regards to the cost of hire versus buy. What we do plan to do, though, is bring forward the purchase of the vans that were going to be replaced at some point anyway, and perhaps keep the vans that were going to be disposed as, if you want, quote-unquote spares, and that will give us the flexibility that we need to continue to operate the service in this new COVID model.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Roland. Councillor Clark, you were in there with a question.
Yeah, just really, and I think it's an essential, you know, that we keep our frontline workers safe in the middle of this COVID restrictions. You do see them out working, and it is keeping them safe. You can't put a price in regards to that. Just in regards to bringing forward the purchase in advance, I take it, Roland, that'll be our green fleet strategy. The smaller vans would be non-fossil fuels.
Chair, we have a paper later on in regards to the strategy. We'd be hopeful that we move forward with the procurement of these vans as soon as we can. Some of them may meet the need for the electric vehicles, depending on the range. Some of them may not, but that will, as we get into each business case for them, we will know that. The timescale for the full strategy, I would suggest, will be longer than it will take us to purchase these vans. So some of them, or most of them, I don't know yet, but some of them, or the majority of them, may be efficient vehicles, but not electric until we get into the detail of that.
Okay, thank you, Roland. So, item 9, we had a proposal there from Councillor Stokes and was seconded by Councillor Clark. So we move on to item 10. This is just for noting. Roland, are you speaking on this?
Chair, yes. This is a response to a letter that the committee asked to be written to the Minister in relation to increasing the fines. I think it actually came from Councillor Taylor. I just see him putting a question up there. So the response is there. I suppose the highlights of the letter is saying that they're currently, quote-unquote, the data has been used to inform the Department's review of the current fixed penalty notice regime, and your correspondence will be added to the information already gathered in this review. So I suppose it's a wait what the Department do in regards to the review that they have mentioned here, Chair.
Thank you, Roland. I just see Councillor Taylor's in there with the
question. Yeah, sure. Understand it's obviously for noting, but just to obviously acknowledge a response from the Minister. Now, it's not obviously given a commitment to take forward our recommendation, but it's not counting it out either, I suppose, given that there is a review ongoing in respect of these issues. I just hope that the Department will give, you know, full consideration to that suggestion that we have made. I think it's necessary as one of the tools to try and combat this problem. So, you know, we obviously will await the outcome of that review, and I would obviously, you know, ask the council if they're asked to, you know, make any further representations in respect of this to outline those, you know, concerns that we have regarding this issue and the fact that we do want these type of measures implemented to try and to deal with it. So it's just more of an acknowledgement of the Minister's response. So thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Taylor. Councillor Andrews.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. I agree wholeheartedly with the Councillor Taylor's sentiments or comments here, you know, outlining the concerns. You know, that's the Council, if there's any further opportunities to pass on our feelings and viewpoints, especially on an important matter, yeah, regarding dog fouling. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Andrews. Okay, we move on to item 11. This is the R21 Joint Committee Monthly Bulletin for the 24th of September 2020. I think, is Johnny coming in on this?
Chair, no, back to myself. Just really, number 11 and number 12 are your monthly updates from R21. They're for noting, unless any members has any specific questions through a series.
Okay, no, we don't seem to have any issues. Oh, Hold on. Councillor McKee's in there with a question.
Yes, just one for Roland there, maybe. It was suggested at the last ART meeting that perhaps the acting chief executive of the joint committee would perhaps give an opportunity to brief the council staff, and this is right across the board, and the six councillors who are in operation there together, and at least speak to them, perhaps even across the 11 council, that he can, you know, give an update and a review as to where they're at. So I'm not too sure, Roland, if you have heard that, or whether the council itself have actually approached Tim for an update. Thank you.
Yes, Chair, if I can come back to that. Councillor McKee is correct. I had a conversation with Tim, the acting chief executive of ART 21, and he has offered to come to committee to undertake a presentation. I did discuss that with the chair, our chairperson, Una McGinnis, Councillor McGinnis, and we've agreed that will be at a forthcoming meeting. So I think we're looking at November at this point. If not November, it would be December. I think that's right, Chair. Are you happy enough with that approach?
Yeah, I'm happy enough. I remember discussing it, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so item 13 is the Historic Actions Tracking Sheet for Neighbourhood Services Committee. I need a proposer and a seconder for this item, please. Thank you, Councillor Andrews. And I'm not sure who was first, hold on. Councillor Stokes seconded there. Thank you. Okay, moving on to item 14. So items 14 to 22 are deemed to be exempt under paragraph 3 of part 1 of Schedule 6 of the Local Government Act 2014. Information relating to the financial or business affairs of any particular person, including the council holding that information, and the public may by resolution be excluded during these items of business. Can I get a proposer and a seconder to go into closed session, please? Thank you, Councillor Stokes. Can I get a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Mason. Okay, we'll just wait for the media to leave.
Yeah, the media have confirmed they're not coming back in.
Okay, thanks, Sarah. Okay, we'll just go through items 14 to 22 then. Item 14 was the business case for the provision of the new public toilet in Clough. On the proposal of Councillor Curran, seconded by Councillor Andrews, it was agreed to note the content of the report and associated business case and to accept the conclusion of the business case that the Council proceed with the proposal to provide a new public toilet in Clough. Item 15, business case, provision of electrical maintenance and minor projects. On the proposal of Councillor Stokes, seconded by Councillor Clark, it was agreed to note the content of the report and associated business case and to accept the conclusion of the business case that the Council proceed with Option 3. Option 3 will see the appointment of a NIC, EIC and Sparksy registered electrical contractor to support the Council's electrical maintenance service and to provide minor electrical works for a three-year period or up to the maximum value of the overall contract, which is $450,000. The service to be procured through tender or through use of suitable framework. Item 16, business case, was provision of minor construction works. On the proposal of Councillor Stokes, seconded by Councillor Murphy, it was agreed to note the content of the report and associated business case and to accept the conclusion of the business case that the Council proceed with Option 3. Option 3 will see the appointment of a minor construction works contractor to complete minor works contracts across the Council for a three-year period or up to the maximum value of the overall contract, which is $180,000. Service to be procured through tender or through use of a suitable framework. Item 17 was a business case for the fleet transition strategy. On the proposal of Councillor Stokes, seconded by Councillor Clark, it was agreed to note the content of the report and associated business case and to approve the business case to procure specialist technical support relating to the Council's fleet transition strategy. Item 18, economic appraisal for the collection, treatment and processing of residual waste deposited at the Dunpatrick, Ballinahinch and Castlewellan HRC sites. On the proposal of Councillor Mason, seconded by Councillor Owen, it was agreed to approve the economic appraisal to procure a contract for the collection, treatment and processing of residual waste deposited at the Dunpatrick, Ballinahinch and Castlewellan HRC sites. Item 19, economic appraisal for the receipt, storage and transport of curbside collected residual waste from within the former Down District Council area. On the proposal of Councillor Murphy, seconded by Councillor Casey, it was agreed to approve the economic appraisal to procure a contract for the receipt, storage and transport of curbside collected residual waste from within the former Down District Council area. Item 20, economic appraisal for the collection, treatment and processing of road sweeping waste deposited at the Council HRC sites. On the proposal of Councillor Casey, seconded by Councillor Andrews, it was agreed to approve the economic appraisal to procure a contract for the collection, treatment and processing of road sweeping waste deposited at the Council's HRC sites. Item 21 is the economic appraisal for the collection, treatment and processing of green wood waste deposited at the Council's HRC sites. On the proposal of Councillor Murphy, seconded by Councillor Stokes, it was agreed to approve the economic appraisal to procure a contract or contracts for the collection, treatment and processing of green and wood waste deposited at the Council's HRC sites. And finally, item 22, the economic appraisal for the collection, treatment and processing of paints and varnishes waste deposited at the Council's HRC sites. On the proposal of Councillor Stokes, seconded by Councillor McKevitt, it was agreed to approve the economic appraisal to procure a contract for the collection, treatment and processing of paints and varnishes waste deposited at the Council's HRC sites. Okay, and that concludes that bit of the meeting for tonight. It's just a couple of things to say before we go. I'm not sure if you are all aware, but I'm on today in the understanding that this is Roland's last committee meeting as Director of Neighbourhood Services. And on a personal note, I'd just like to say thank you to Roland for all his help and guidance in my role as Chair of this committee from May. I'd like to wish him all the best in his new venture, and I would like to congratulate Johnny McBride, who has been appointed as the Interim Director of the Neighbourhood Services Committee. I'm sure everyone on and off this committee would echo those sentiments, and thanks again, Roland, and all the best in your new venture. Okay, a few people looking to come in here now. I'm lost. Sarah, who have you up for?
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson. And I would like to take this opportunity, Roland, of thanking you for all your hard work that you've carried out in the department. I've got to know you since Shadow Council days, whenever I was Vice Chair of Development, and Councillor Clark was my chair. I'd just like to say you will be missed. And I must say, you carried out the job to the best of your ability. And I must say, at all times, I found you courteous and kind, and nothing ever was a problem. So I'd like to wish you and your family all the best for the future. Our loss is going to be your new venture's gain. But all the best, and thanks for everything.
Thanks to you, Councillor Andrews. Councillor Stokes?
Yeah, Chair, just joining in your comments, Chair. Roland, an absolute pleasure to work with. Always there at the end of the phone when needed, and I want to wish Roland all the very best. The new organisation you work for certainly going to benefit to the Council's loss. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Stokes. Councillor Clark?
Thanks, Chair, and I echo all your comments as well, and wish Roland all the best for the future. I'd like to thank Roland for all his efforts for the Council, not just in his director's role, but in previous roles in Council as well. He's always been a pleasure to work with. He was always a can-do officer, you know, who tries his best to get a solution to the problem and do, as I said, do his best. I wish him well for the future and everything he does. And I look forward to working with Johnny in the interim as well. Johnny, I wish Johnny best in his role as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Clark. And Councillor Taylor?
Yep, thank you, Chair. Certainly, I would also like to offer my thanks and best wishes on behalf of both myself and my party colleagues to Roland. I think, you know, it's already been said, no matter what issue you raise for Roland, he certainly went out of his way to ensure that issue was resolved, and he has been a pleasure to work with, and, you know, I certainly want to pay tribute to the work that he has done within council, you know, in his previous role and in his current role as director, and certainly wherever he's going next, you know, certainly, you know, he'll be a great asset to whoever that may be. And Roland, listen, best wishes with your new role, and we don't know if our paths will cross at some point again, but listen, if it doesn't, I've no doubt that you'll do a great job wherever you're going. So best wishes to you, and to Johnny as well, best wishes to you as you take on this role. Maybe a glutton for punishment, Johnny, I don't know. You don't know what you've taken on, but best wishes to you as well, and certainly any support that we can give to you as you undertake your new role, we'll be willing to do that. So again, best wishes to Roland as he goes off to pastures new, and thanks to Johnny for taking on the role, and offer him all the best with that as well. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Pastor Taylor. I think that's all that's looking in, Roland.
Chair, if I could just say thanks very much. I was laughing there when Councillor Clark says all the problems. So certainly we've tried to deal with all the problems together, but thanks very much, and wish the councillors individually and the committee the very best for the future.
Yeah, thanks very much, Roland, and I also look forward to working with Johnny in the future, but all the best, Roland. So that's us for tonight, and there's a load of comments down the side there, Roland, for you, so good luck.
Thanks, Chair. Good luck, Johnny. Thanks,
Roland. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Bye-bye.